This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Covered in Pet Hair, a boozy show for pet lovers on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez-Arada, and today I have the pleasure of having a drink and a chat with a comedian, a writer, and an animal advocate. I will tell you all about her and introduce you as soon as we come back from these messages from our sponsors.
How many of you have pets? My hand's raised. Now think about how lucky you are to have such a sweet little pet in your life, and that pet is lucky to have you too. But unfortunately, there are countless pets out there that don't have a home to call their own. However, Bob's from Skechers is trying to change that. So we developed Bob's for Dogs and Cats to help pets in need. With every purchase of adorable Bob's footwear or fun, stylish apparel, or even the cutest Bob's pet accessories, Skechers makes a donation to Petco Love to help save shelter pets. And with your help, we've already saved the lives of over 1 million pets and raised over $7 million. So while you're getting style and comfort with features like Skechers' famous memory foam cushioning, you're also helping to save an adorable pet in need and helping another lucky owner be connected with a future best friend and companion. Because happiness is having a loving pet by your side. Find Bob's at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, select Petco locations, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Covered in Pet Hair. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez-Arada, and today I have the pleasure of having a drink and a chat with a pet parent, a self-described annoying vegan. She's an animal advocate and rescue volunteer. She's a writer, an entrepreneur, a stand-up comedian, and a road tripper. She claims St. Louis as her hometown and currently lives in Tacoma, Washington. She's wife to Brad since 2005. It's not every day you meet young people who've been married for almost 20 years, so congratulations on that. She is dog mom to Phoenix, cat mom to Sydney. She's founder of On the Nose, a consulting and publishing agency. She's author of Stay, My Forever Friendship with an Aging Dog. Her name is Lisa Rimmert. Welcome, Lisa. It's so good to have you on the show.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm so excited to meet somebody that shares so many of the same things, like same interests as me. I too am a writer. I too am an entrepreneur, and I too love old dogs. So I can't wait to get into your book and find out all that inspired you to write it. But before we get into all that, I want to introduce our drinking game today. Anybody participating in our drinking game, anytime you hear this word,
the secret word is Dakota.
Make sure you take a drink of whatever you're enjoying, alcoholic, non-alcoholic, cold, hot, whatever it is. But please be sure you're over 21 to partake in an alcoholic beverage in the U.S. Never drink and drive and always drink responsibly. So what are you having today, my self-described annoying vegan? Is it something vegan?
Of course. Yeah, it's something very fruity, which I guess I'm also fruity. I gave it my own name because I took a recipe from the internet and I changed it a little bit. So now I feel like it's my own recipe. And I'm calling this a mint berry mocktail. Ooh. It's got fruit and sparkling lemonade and mint, and it's very refreshing. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to make something.
Ooh, I love a mocktail. I wish I had the time. Honestly, I feel like it takes longer to make a mocktail than to pour a beer like I did today. And this is a double white. It's something that I'm having now because I plan on having leftover Vietnamese food later. And I felt like this would be a really good match for it. So cheers. Thank you so much for being my guest. I'm so excited to get to know you.
Cheers. I'm really excited to get to know you as well. I think we have even more in common than you thought, because my husband's also in the military. And I think we both were our husbands were both at Walter Reed, I'm assuming, at some point, because you lived in Northern Virginia. So all over the place.
He was actually at Fort Meade, but he lived in Alexandria. And that's how we met. We met at a friend of mine got married, and he was his neighbor. So we met at our mutual friend's wedding. And then we moved to Fort Polk, which I do not recommend. I don't know if you've heard of Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Yeah, I've heard the name and I don't have a good connotation around it.
Just when you talk to your husband next, just say this poor woman lived in the armpit of the army. That's what they call it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So it's so great. Thank you for your service. I know how difficult it is to be a military spouse and still an entrepreneur at heart and want to create and want to do all these things. And it's hard because your spouse's job always kind of takes precedence. So thank you for your service and your sacrifice.
Back at ya.
Thank you so much. All right. So let's get to the funny part about this, because you're a comedian. So I need you to, you know, I need to allow you to be the funny lady that you are. And I planned this first game. It's called Too Punny. And it's basically punny jokes about pets I found online. But you can certainly change them because you are obviously on the spot now and I've called you funny. So now you have to perform for me.
Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot.
I know, right? Terrible. But I'm just going to play this game with you. I'll ask you the question. If you have a better response, we'll see. Otherwise, I'll give you the response that I found online. Ready to play?
Ready.
What's a dog's favorite movie?
Ooh, this is so cheesy, but the thing that's coming to my mind is Play Die Hard.
That is not what it is, but that's awesome. I love that. This I got from bestlifeonline.com, and their response is Harry Potter, P-A-W, and the Sorcerer's Bone.
Okay, they win that
that's
one.
That's very punny. All right,
there's two puns in one.
Exactly. What did the dog say before he left for work? And that's my cat walking in front of the screen. Okay, what did the dog say before he left for work?
Oh, this is really hard. I feel like no one's ever going to see my comedy based on this.
I know. You don't have to judge. You don't have to judge her based on these dumb jokes, guys. Come on. Stand up is so much better than dumb jokes like this.
Stand up. Yeah, I can prepare for it.
Exactly.
Write things down, memorize them. What did the dog say when he left for work?
Before he left for work. It's so dumb. It's really dumb. Like, you're probably overthinking it.
It's like, I'll be backyard.
Oh, cute. I love that. Just another day at the poffice.
Oh, you're nice. They're really, I feel like. They're leaning into that word paw really heavily.
Yeah, they really are. Okay. What did the dog say before eating his snack?
This is so hard. I feel so on the spot. What
ready?
Is it?
Bone appetit.
Very nice. I really applaud this
website. Bone and treat in one. That's pretty impressive. Somebody really, really worked hard on these. All right.
I love it.
What do you call it when a cat wins first place at a dog show?
A meow steak.
Oh, I like that. That's a really good one. They called it a catastrophe, but I feel like those are
very
synonymous.
Nice.
Bravo, that was really good.
Listen, if this website needs writers.
I know, really. What's a cat's favorite book? I feel like I've heard this one before. You might have too.
A Murder Whiskery.
Oh, how cute. I love that. It's The Great Catsby. I still prefer yours.
Oh, nice. Okay, I went with genre. They went with title. So, okay.
Yes, that's very,
very nice.
Good. What did you say again? A Murder
Whiskery.
Whiskery. I love that. All right. What do you call a dog who picks locks?
I got nothing.
A corgi.
Oh, I was thinking key, but then nothing was coming up.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know who came up with this. All right, the last one. What's a hound's favorite holiday?
A hound's favorite holiday.
Ow.
Halloween.
Very
Are you serious? Okay.
Yes, very, very good.
They kind of phoned it in there, didn't they?
I did. I do think they did. But honestly, that was as good as it got. All right. Tell
cute.
Me about yourself. Thank you so much. Best Life Online had 50 of them. I just chose seven. And they were all animal related, so not just pet related. So there were some cute ones in there. But I like to keep it dog and cat here. So I want to know more about you. First of all, I can understand that you're a writer, right? That's what you study. That's what you do. I can understand that you're a pet lover. Who isn't? Only the great people are. But tell me how you got into comedy, because I feel like comedy is not for the faint of heart and it's not super female friendly. So I would love to hear your story about that.
Sure. Yeah. And anytime a woman says, I'm thinking about getting into comedy, I go, do it. You got to do it. We need more women. It's always like me and eight dudes and maybe one other woman. 20-year-old dudes at that. So it's like, I often feel like I don't belong, but it's a lot of fun. So I think that, I mean, I've always been what I consider funny. I was kind of a ham when I was growing up. And I remember it was the 80s and my dad bought a video camera, which at that time it was like, you know, this big and you could hear it zoom and all that. And he used to videotape us and our house and everything to send to relatives. And I was always in front of the camera, like annoyingly so. And I should have been grounded for the amount I was jumping in, trying to like block whatever he was actually trying to film. So I've always had that kind of personality. And then when I was an adult, you know, I went to college and moved around with my husband and ended up back in St. Louis, which is where I consider home. And I just Googled, you know, I wonder if there's like improv or something around here. Like, I don't even know if I was looking to do it or looking for a show to see. I was just like, maybe this is something funny that is in this town that I don't know about. So I found an improv school training center and ended up taking an intro class and just being like, okay, these are my people. It's comedy, but it's also like a lot about saying yes and showing up as your true self and being like being accepting and being a good listener. And it was just like at a time when I really needed that. And from there, I just ended up learning about stand-up. There was a stand-up class at the place where I did improv and just got into it from there. And I would say that I haven't looked back, but that's not true. There are a few times when I looked back. And then, so it's been an off on again, off again relationship, but I just got back into it like full force in 2021.
Well, I saw on your website that you have like upcoming dates. So you're definitely active, which I thought was awesome. So tell me, what kind of jokes do you tell related to pets?
I love a silly joke. Please don't take my punning as an indication.
Nobody is judging your stand-up based on that game. I promise you.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, but I do. So I mostly talk about what I'm interested in. I talk about myself, and what I'm interested in always comes back around to animals in some way. So there's no escaping talking about animals on stage. I always say, you know, if you like dogs, you'll like me. If you're not interested, I don't know, maybe go to the bathroom. But I do talk a lot about my dog and a little bit about the book that I wrote about my previous dog. And just animals in general and my relationship with them. I don't have a lot of jokes like this, but my favorite is to tell a joke that really is just funny, but also has some kind of like message underneath it that if people like gave it a second thought, they would sort of like learn something as well. Those are my favorite, but they're of course the hardest to write.
Of course, absolutely. And some people don't want to learn anything when they go to a stand-up show. You know, they just want to be like,
yeah, and there's
give
plenty
me more
of comics
beer
doing
and let
that.
Make me laugh. Yeah.
There's a lot out there for those people.
Well, I was thinking when you said that there were 20-year-olds doing stand-up, I feel like part of doing stand-up is life experience. So I don't know what a 20-year-old brings to the table. I'm not judging a 20-year-old, but like as a 40-some-year-old woman, I feel like I would probably not relate. I would much more relate to you and your stories of pets and life and marriage and all that. So tell me about your book. You just alluded to it. Where in this journey did you say, I'm going to sit down and write a whole book?
A whole book?
It's a lot to do. I think people don't realize just what a huge undertaking writing a book is.
And I didn't either, which is why I started doing it. Because I don't think if I knew. So now I have an idea for a second book, but I'm very hesitant to dive into it just because I know how much work it is. Oh. And so I benefited from ignorance all along the way. But I didn't really start out to write a book. But once I decided that what I was writing would become a book, I really was just learning as I went. It was 2020, like end of 2020. So I had the benefit, which is weird to say, of the pandemic, where, you know, we weren't really doing a lot of social things. And so I had a lot of time to write a book. And it was just, it was
sorry
definitely
to interrupt you, but I no, see a do. Puppy back there.
That's Phoenix. Yeah, she doesn't know where
Phoenix,
she wants to lay down.
Oh, cute. She just like looked back and was like, am I on here?
She's
are they
like,
seeing
I'm gonna,
me?
I'm going to go down and lay on the couch.
She's so cute. I loved her little like over the shoulder look at you. Yeah. And then like walking. I'm sorry to interrupt. So you
no, not at all.
You took it on not knowing. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you?
It's hard to say because I self-published, which means that I did all the stuff. I mean, some parts I outsourced, but I not only wrote the book, I was in charge of editing, and then I was in charge of publishing, which is like a whole, you have to know technology. I wasn't excited about that part. And then marketing the book. I think all in all, it took about two and a half years from start to finish. Oh. Yeah.
Including the publishing part.
Including the publishing. Yeah. It was actually a lot smoother than I thought it would be. But that was the part I was most afraid of, because I like the creative. I like the writing. I like the editing. And then when you say like, okay, now you have to like learn this website, I'm kind of like,
That's the least fun part. Yeah, I hear that. I hear that so much. So the actual writing part, how long did that take to tell the story?
I think about a year and a half. I will say, though, I did everything as a newbie, and a lot of it, I did it the wrong way, kind of. Like, I had gone back, I would do it a different way, maybe. Although I'm kind of a rebel, so maybe not. But, you know, everyone says, like, write it and then have it finished before you start this part of it. And I just kind of melded it all together. Because there were points when I wasn't really feeling the writing or I wasn't feeling the editing. And then I would be like, okay, well, let me get ahead of myself and start learning how to market this thing. Or, you know, so it's kind of like in several phases at once. But I think about a year and a half to write the whole thing.
Nice. Nice. That's a big commitment, writing a book. I love that you wrote it about a dog, obviously a dog that you saw age and that you saw pass and that you had a connection with. And I want to get into all of that, but we first need to take a break. Let's listen to our sponsors. And when we come back, I'm going to invite you to play another game, but this is going to be about how humor helps us grieve. And then we're going to dive into your book, what it's about, the story of your beloved pet, and how basically that pet changed your life because now you're a published author. So everybody, don't go anywhere. I will be right back with Lisa, and she's going to tell us all about it. Don't go anywhere.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Covered in Pet Hair. I'm your host, Isabel Alvarez-Arada, and today I'm speaking with Lisa Rimmer, who is a comedian, an animal advocate, an author, a writer. She does it all. A military spouse like me. And she has kind of mastered using humor to process grief. And I know that all of us pet lovers will at some point, if we haven't already, experience a huge and profound loss when our pets pass to the Rainbow Bridge. And Lisa, if you're cool with it, I want to start this part of the show with a game called Laugh It Off. And it's a true and false game. And it's from information I pulled from whatsyourgrief.com. And it's all about how humor and grief can actually work together. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because I feel like you've done such a good job of melding the two. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready. Hit me.
All right. Okay. Number one. Humor is considered a mature defense mechanism, true or false?
I really want this to be true, so true.
It is true, and I believe that Sigmund Freud was the one who actually said that, where people who can have like a dark sense of humor about death are more mature.
I know,
I love it. Okay, next one. Humor can enhance feelings of control and pleasure and is relatively effective at helping people deal with conflicting emotions and thoughts. True or false?
True. Gotta be true.
It is true, right? That's why we use humor, because we don't even know what to do with all of the stuff that we are feeling, thinking. So then it's like kind of like a really good way to distract.
Yes. I often I don't often go to funerals, but anytime I need to go to a funeral or interact with somebody who's sad, I always have a little bit of hesitancy because I'm the person that you come to when you're ready to joke about things or you want to be uplifted. And I am always uncomfortable in the space of it's just time to be sad and that's the only emotion. But most people want both things. We're feeling happy, we're feeling sad, we're feeling all kinds of things at the same time.
And it's totally natural because I remember being a kid, I think I was a tween or early teen, and one of our relatives had passed away. And it was my grandmother's first cousin, and we were all sitting in the funeral home. There was a wake, and it was very small because he was from Ecuador, but he had passed away in Miami. So none of the family from Ecuador was there. It was just his immediate family and my family, who was my sister, my uncle, who's like a brother to me, my mom. And my grandmother trips, coming back from getting water, and we're all sitting there super somber. And the spouse obviously is destroyed. His kids are destroyed. And my grandmother trips, but my grandmother tries to pretend that she didn't trip. So we watch her kind of walk, trip, straighten herself out, look around, think that nobody saw her. And the giggles just hit all of us, right? It just, because it wasn't about where we were at that point. It was something funny happened. And we're all kind of just sitting there, and you can see our shoulders moving, but our faces are straight, serious. And we still laugh to this day about that. And it didn't take away from the mourning. It didn't take away from the fact that we were super sad. And to this day, I'm so sad because he was one of my favorite relatives. It was kind of a nice release. It was kind of a nice distraction.
Yeah, we need those.
I know. And it's a little dark and it's a little maybe disrespectful and rude, but I don't know. After doing this research, I feel better about it. Here we go. For many, nervous laughter is their instinctual response to a situation that seems stressful or painful. True or false?
True.
Do you have any memories of laughing when you really shouldn't have?
I mean, every day of my life. I just actually took this quiz online that was what's your worldview or something, some psychology quiz. And one of the questions that kind of, how they ask you the same question, but they word it in different ways. This one thing that they were trying to get at is do you see humor in the world? And I was always just strongly agree, strongly agree. I don't know where that comes from. A lot of it is probably defense mechanisms, but I can see the humor in everything, and it often got me in trouble and called a smart ass when I was a little girl.
I'm sure raising a kid that sees humor in everything is not easy, for sure.
Yes.
All right, next one. The reason why we laugh in serious situations is to put the circumstances into perspective and make them seem less threatening. True or false?
I'm going to go true again.
It is true, and it was proven by a neuroscientist whose name is V.S. Ramachandran in his book, A Brief Tour of Human Consciousness.
Oh, I love that you have all the science to back this stuff up.
I know. Gallows humor is humor used to lighten difficult, painful, and scary situations. True or false?
True. I had a husband who went to war, and I know all about that.
Oh my Lord. Yes, absolutely. Been there. Yes. Gallows humor in the face of difficult circumstances may be used to make the challenge seem smaller or more surmountable.
Yeah, makes sense.
Did it help while your husband was deployed?
Oh yeah. I mean, he told me about, I think I said I had a husband. He's still around.
Yes, he's still around. I introduced her as still married to him.
I still have him, yeah. Yeah, I think it helped him, deal with hard situations and also with camaraderie, building camaraderie. You're all in a tough situation together, and talking about it in a humorous way is a way to bond about it.
Absolutely. You know, what's funny is my husband is going to retire in 2 years, and I keep telling him he's going to need to have a class to reintegrate to other people, because I feel the military colloquialisms, the military discourse, the military humor does not always translate to outside the military. All right. Gallows humor is bad for individual morale and the morale of larger groups.
False.
It is false. It actually is a good thing because it makes the enemy or challenge seem less intimidating.
Makes sense.
It makes perfect sense for what we're discussing with the military. Last one. Everyone enjoys humor in tense situations.
False.
False. According to whatsyourgrief.com, this is a warning. often for those closest to the crisis, jokes made in the heat of the moment can be off-putting and offensive. So use the gallows humor with caution, everybody. And here I'm going to go from the benefits of using humor to asking you about your experience with humor and the loss of your dog, Dakota. So on your website, and I believe on your book, you say that your experience losing or preparing to lose Dakota started with an accident in the house and then a referral to a specialist. Would you mind elaborating on that if that's okay with you? I just want to kind of hear the story of how this all began.
Yeah. And I will say, though, that that's not what launched me on my journey to dealing with it. I was so far beyond accepting it. I guess beyond is not the right word. I was not anywhere near accepting even that she was getting older, and she was 13 at the time. I was in denial the whole way. So Dakota was a dog who was very independent and not very snuggly, very adventurous. She just was very easy. So in the book, I talk about this story. The book actually starts with when my dog is 13. And at that time, I was in complete denial that she was old, getting old, ever going to pass away. I just wouldn't hear of any of it. And then there was a time she was very healthy. She was running around. We were going to the park. We were hanging out. Everything was going great. She had a little bit of arthritis, but like nothing to write home about. And then one day I was working from home at the time, and I came from the living room where she and I were hanging out together. And I went into the bedroom. I was doing a load of laundry, folding a load of laundry while I watched a webinar. And for folks who work from home, it's kind of how it is, right?
Yeah.
And I came back to the living room and she was pooping on the rug. And this is a 13-year-old dog who I adopted as a puppy, fully house trained, very out of character for her to be using the bathroom inside. Yes. So that's kind of what launches the book, the story in the book, and what launched our investigation into what's going on with her. We first went to our regular veterinarian, but my husband is a doctor, so he also knows that there are specialists who maybe can dig in more. And we ended up seeing a specialist. We weren't necessarily referred by anybody to see a specialist because, you know, dogs age, they end up losing their faculties and and all that is a pretty normal thing. We think of it as a normal aging process, but we were diligent, to use a nice word.
Well, you have a medical kind of community around you. So you're we need to get to the bottom of this.
Right, exactly. And so my husband, he's a specialist in like the musculoskeletal system, which is a thing that I can hardly even say. But so he was like, we need to take her to a specialist that's like basically me, but for dogs, you know, because they can help us if it's like her arthritis advancing or whatever.
Got it.
They can help us prevent it. They can help us, you know, overcome it. That was kind of our thinking at the time. It ended up being a spinal issue, which is also pretty common, I think. I don't think it's commonly diagnosed because most people, it just looks like regular aging. And it is part of aging, but it ended up being a spinal thing. So a neurological issue. And we ended up seeing a neurologist and kind of going from there with, we didn't end up doing surgery, but we went down the path of, you know, how can we get her into physical therapy, shots that could help, all those kinds of things.
Yep. Do you remember the name of the condition she had, just in case somebody is hearing and has had that experience?
Yeah, it goes by a lot of different names, but spinal stenosis is kind of like the general term. It's like a narrowing of something in her spine. And it's, you know, people get it as they age, dogs get it as they age, and it ends up just looking kind of like, oh, my dog's getting older and slowing down and it's harder for them to get up and get down and stuff. But for us, it helped a lot to go to a specialist to have like an answer and a name for it and certain things that we could do to kind of not prevent it, but slow it down and help her feel better.
Absolutely. So she lived with that for about 2 years. And so you're saying that you were in denial for a lot of that?
Oh, yeah. The whole time. Yeah, I was in denial. I mean, an unbelievable amount of denial. She was also usually very healthy and active way into her older years. And so I would take her out on walks and people would say, oh, how old's your puppy? And I'd say 10 because she's, you know, she's jumping to try to greet them and things that like puppies do. Never mind that that's bad behavior. Don't even pay attention to that part.
Yeah,
of it.
No, my seniors can do whatever they want. I don't really.
Yeah, it's all exactly. And now I have a puppy who can kind of do whatever she wants to. It's all about her.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because everybody kind of grieves differently. I had a very similar experience to what you're talking about. And it's so crazy because he was like 13 when we got degenerative myelopathy diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And unlike your reaction, because grief is really complex, I actually started grieving him immediately. Mm-hmm. And he lived for 2 years and he just passed away in January. And
oh gosh, I didn't know that.
I actually feel like I had already grieved him. So by the time I lost him and then we euthanized him and it was, we did a celebratory like send off. It was right after the holidays. So he was able to see everybody. We were very intentional about the way we sent him off. I was okay because I had grieved for like 2 years, which I do not recommend to anybody because that was very hard. I felt like every day I looked at him and I was like, tomorrow could be the day he leaves. My vet had actually planted the seed that he might have like a couple months left. And he lived 2 years. So, right? So, like, you get this diagnosis of a couple months, and now you're, like, 2 years in, and you're like, oh, my gosh. Or a year in and a year and a half. And we marked a lot of cool milestones, but it's really interesting how, like, I want to highlight that. But, like, the grieving process is different for everybody, even with the same ages, right? And the way you described Dakota is the way I would describe Titan. Healthy, never had accidents inside. You know what I mean? So, it's, like, very similar. It's just reminding me a lot. So, once it was time to say goodbye, did you start using humor then? Were you still in denial? When did the humor kind of come back into this experience for you?
I think it was kind of throughout. There was definitely a time when I had to say goodbye. Like when it was time to say goodbye, I won't give away the ending because it's kind of like where the book goes, but it was pretty sudden. Yeah. I mean, it depends on, it's all relative, right? But for us, it felt sudden. And from that moment, probably for a week or two, humor wasn't super top of mind.
No. Those first 2 weeks are the worst. I wouldn't wish those on my worst enemy.
The worst. I think, though, that was a little bit, there's a thing when you're, well, I'll speak for myself. There was a feeling when I was really in the grief in those couple of weeks that I wanted to be, I guess loyal is the closest word I've got to it. Like, I was like, I have to be so sad. Like, I didn't, maybe humorous thoughts would come in and maybe I would say them here and there, but I just was of the mind of like, I have to be as sad as I need to be for as long as I need to be, because this was my everything dog, right? You know? So there was a little bit of that, like, I'm not going to let it in sort of feeling. Mm-hmm. I do remember making an inappropriate joke that my husband wasn't ready for really shortly after, that experience. But I kind of had like the opposite experience as you. I didn't really grieve because I was just in denial the whole time. There's a point, and I mentioned this in the book, where my husband says, we should take Dakota on like a vacation. We should take her on a road trip. She loved the snow. So he's like, we should take her somewhere where there's going to be snow and let her kind of romp around slowly and carefully. And I was like, yeah, totally. Let's do that. And then he mentioned, because it could be her last time to see snow. And I was like, hold on, what? Like, that wasn't something that had ever crossed my mind. Right. And so it was just, denial city the whole time. But then after she passed away is when I started writing the book. And so writing a book, you write and look at the same words over and over and over and in different ways. And then you end up cutting a lot of it and reshaping it. And so that was kind of where I like grieved all that I could, you know, like I was fine after that. You know, I mean, I still get some moments of like, I think about certain things and I get sad, or I, of course, certain memories or certain instances, and I'll get sad and start kind of grieving all over again. But the book really cleaned me out.
Yeah. You know, what's funny. But I say that a lot in this. I should come up with a better term or phrase.
I do the
for this,
same
but,
thing. Yeah. Let me know what you come up with.
So I interviewed Dale Ward, who is the author of the Raising the Worst Dog Ever, a guide. Basically, it's half memoir, half training guide, because she's a dog trainer. And she did the same thing where she's kind of like, she poured her grief into this book. And I think that you're a natural writer. I don't know that she was a writer by trade or by profession or training before that, but it seemed to help her kind of grieve. And it sounds like it helped you grieve. Do you talk about the guilt that you felt or that kind of like responsibility to be so sad in your book? Is that something that you mention?
I mean, any emotion that I had, I mentioned.
Oh, God, God. Because I feel like
I'm sure that's in there.
It's so common to feel so guilty. Like, we should have done more. We could have done more, especially when there's euthanasia involved. Like, was it too soon? Did I wait too long? There's no perfect time. I have so much that I can talk about on that topic. I've had so many friends lose pets recently, and I had to kind of walk every single one of them through that. Like, every single person feels that guilt. And so I want to ask you, if you had a friend come up to you and say, like, I don't feel right laughing and I don't feel right smiling or making jokes or involving humor right now because I feel guilty, what would you say to them?
I mean, one of your facts kind of alluded to this, but I just think the best thing to do is take the cues from the person that's closest to it. So, like, if I'm a friend of someone whose dog passed away, I'm not going to be the first one to bring humor into that. I mean, right. I have in the past and hopefully learned from it that it's a mistake, but I'm going to kind of go off of the person, what they're feeling. One of the things that I really learned was how to treat someone who's grieving, how to interact with them. I've lost relatives, I've lost grandparents and people, like, nothing traumatic, but just the regular, you know, people you tend to lose when you right. start, you know, approaching 40.
Growing up.
Yeah. And I always thought, you know, because I've been a dog person my whole life, and Dakota in particular was my soul dog, you know, like, she was right. my entire world, identity, everything. And so I thought I knew what that would feel like, but I really didn't. You know, I could conceptualize it a little bit, but it's completely different once you go through it. And so it really took me going through that to be able to really fully have empathy for other people that are going through it. And I'm still learning, but I looked at what people said to me and didn't say to me, and got a lot of, like, what I want to do and what I don't want to do for other people. And that's one of the things, is like, take your cues from them. If they seem like they want to be sad with them, which is so hard to do and so awkward, but it's what we should do. And then if they're laughing, you can laugh with them.
That is really good advice. Take your cues from the person who's closest to the loss. And I guess if you're the person who's closest to the loss, knowing that you have permission to feel whatever it is that you feel, right? Like, nobody can tell you what the script is. And I think, like you said, yours was sudden. You felt it was sudden. Other people may not think that's sudden or may not have felt it was sudden. For me with Titan, it was not sudden. That's what I was trying to prevent when we did the whole send-off, is at 15 and a half, the next day could have been an emergency, right? So I was like, I don't want to get to that point. So everybody's going to make their decisions however they're going to make them. You know, everybody's going to Monday morning quarterback the decision, which is the hardest part of the process. Don't do that to yourself. If you take anything away from this episode, don't do that to yourself. There is no perfect time. The perfect time is the time that they went and that it was peaceful and that they're at rest now, and that their body that's no longer serving them is no longer kind of like a burden for them. So I love that you said that, take your cues, but also, when did you give yourself permission to just use humor, deal with it however you want, have a really comforting meal? Like, when did you give yourself permission to be, like, not sad anymore?
I had a comforting meal pretty quickly.
Nothing better than a comforting meal.
I love food. That's actually something I was surprised at, because, you know, the people that are like, oh, I've been working all day and I forgot to eat lunch. I'm not one of those people. I think about food constantly, and I'll be eating lunch thinking, oh, I wonder what I could have for dinner. That's a problem, same. But it is same. What it is.
Same. Especially if I'm on vacation. Like, it's like, we're having breakfast and we already have, like, lunch and dinner planned.
Yep. Yeah. That's my role in vacation planning, is my husband. I'm like, okay, what historical sites do you want to see? Like, what's around here? And then I'll tell you what restaurants are nearby that we can go.
Agreed.
To.
That's exactly how I do it too.
I was surprised in those few days of really heavy grieving that I was like, oh, I don't really even want food. You know, like, I don't even want that. I was like, whoa, who are you? This is not normal. Yeah. But I think, you know, it's hard to remember now how humor really played a role like over the past couple of years. But something that stands out to me when you ask that question is in comedy, there, I want to talk about my book a little bit just to kind of get the word out in case anybody's interested in, like, you know, following me on social and buying it. It was hard for a long time using humor publicly. I know how I feel. I don't want anyone else to get the wrong idea that just because I can make a joke about it, you know, I don't want it to feel crass or something or have people judge me for it.
Right.
And just maybe 6 months ago, if even that, I included a joke, wrote a joke and included it in my stand-up that was about my dog passing away. It's hard. I don't even know if my husband has heard it or not yet. I don't think he has. And I think I would be afraid if he came because he's even more like, we have to be sad and only be sad. And he didn't spend 2 years writing a book about the process of grieving. You know, even like within this family, we've all processed things differently and at different speeds. Absolutely. So I don't know if he would appreciate the joke or not, but that's kind of how long it took me to do it in a public setting. And it gets, you know, it gets laughs, but it also gets groans. And I always have to like interject, like, you know, it's a thing that's still important to me. And I wrote a book about it and all this. So there is still a little bit of like discomfort there for me. Even doing it. But yeah, that's more, I guess, about what I think people maybe wrongly will perceive about me versus like how I actually feel inside.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think humor is meant to distract and it's meant to kind of make light of something huge. And losing a pet is so monumental. I don't think that anybody understands that until it happens. My best friend, Grace, she just last year lost Sammy. He was over 16. Like, he was this cute little Yorkie and he was her first child. I mean, she has two sons now and like, there's no difference in her mind. That was her first child. And of course, he wasn't going to live much longer than 16 years. He had a hugely long and beautiful life. And she kept texting me every day being like, is this normal? Like, I feel like my heart is literally raw. I feel like I can't breathe. Her husband and her would just break down constantly the first like week or two. It was so hard. And I think unless you've been there, you have no idea how hard it's going to be. And again, I wouldn't wish that first few weeks on anybody, like not even my worst enemy. And I do think that connecting with people who get it, like my best friend reached out to me because I've lost a few pets before she has. And I was preparing to lose Titan, right? So like we were kind of in the same place in a different way, but in the same place, connecting to somebody. Like if somebody wants to hear that joke, where would they go to connect with you so that they can kind of connect with somebody who gets it?
I don't know that they can hear that joke unless I make a clip and put it on social media or something, but they can definitely get dogs and humor if they follow me. I'm mainly on Instagram because I'm too old for TikTok and too young for Facebook. I have both those things, but I'm not super active on those. But I'm on Instagram at Lisa Rimmie if anyone wants to follow me. And I don't do I'm small time in comedy, so I mostly just do local shows around the Washington area. But I'll put clips up occasionally so that, you know, my friends and family in other places can see what I'm up to.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And you also have other things to offer. You have your consulting where you write for organizations. Is that right?
I do. Yeah. I write for organizations and individuals in some cases. Anything they need, really. I'm at the beginning stages of my business. And that means that I'm super flexible because I'm trying to kind of cast a wide net and see what I like doing best and where the needs are and things like that. But I end up mostly writing fundraising or marketing copy for organizations. And then for individuals, I help sometimes with like personal statements or cover letters or things like that are expected of non-writers. And so they freak out and come to me.
Awesome. What is the website where people can learn more about that?
That is onthenosecomms.com. That's commms.com.
Perfect. And I will put all of that in the description and in the show notes. I just want to propose a toast to you, Lisa, because I've so enjoyed talking about this. I think it's so healing for people to hear that you can laugh and cry at the same time and it's totally okay. So cheers.
Yes,
thank you so much for sharing your story with me.
Thank you.
I also want to propose a toast to our executive producer, Mark Winter. Thank you, Mark. And to our audience for joining us for these awesome conversations. I hope that if you are going through a loss right now, you will soon be able to laugh it off a little bit and enjoy the fact that these are parts of our lives that we can grieve and we can laugh and we can use humor and we can not whenever it's okay with us. And we set that tone, and you have my permission to do whatever feels right for you in your healing process. Here's to a life covered in pet hair, because there's no better way to live. Cheers.
Cheers.
To learn more about Covered in Pet Hair, please visit coveredinpethair.com or petliferadio.com. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.